there. That's because we were having a private conversation and we were keeping everybody out of. Yes, that's right. Dead Air, Classic Carmine and Eddie Stiley. Actually, I was trying to beat them over the head, but we didn't want the noise to go out over the air. So here I am, alive, awake, with two eyes. Otherwise, I would have had to come in with just one eye because my contact lens tore. Isn't that pathetic? Hey, I got 3 years of wear out of it. What do you want? Anyway, I have a pair of glasses on my nose, a broken pair of glasses at that, that's held on, get this, the two pieces, or the left and right sides, it broke the nose, held together with a piece of wire. I kid you not. So, I am suffering from wanging eye strain because the lenses are aimed improperly. You should have seen what it was like driving. God, talk about spherical aberration. Anyway, here I am with these screwball glasses, and there you are with potentially screwball phone calls. But I have to warn you folks, we have a special lined up tonight. That's right. With me on another line, and I have my glasses off so I can't see which line, I have waiting with me the poetry guy and... Yeah, hold this really close to my face. I'm so nearsighted. And noted witch researcher, Trish Telesco. This should be fun. The Brain Damage Halloween Back to Standard Time special. That's right. We are on for what is now 2.5 hours of real time. And even though we still only go off at 2 o'clock. Hello.
Hi.
Hi, folks. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Trish, I remember one time. You remember those Time Life books on the occult?
Yes.
Yes.
Actually, it was a pretty good series.
Yeah, but I remember in the advertising, there was one lady who I guess was, in fact, a witch, or at the very least, an actress playing one. She said, "How do you know there are no such thing as witches when you don't know what one looks like?" It's a perfect way to begin this. So, go on. What does a witch look like?
Well, if it makes you feel better, we tend to carry briefcases instead of broomsticks.
That's what I was expecting.
I don't know. A lot of people ask me that question, and if you'd ask my neighbors that, it's like, oh, the girl next door, you know.
Yeah.
We come in all shapes and sizes and colors and varieties. It's not like the stereotypic Halloween picture that you see, or at least I certainly hope not. As a matter of fact, my son is 8, and he gets very upset and when he sees those pictures because it's like, that's not my mommy, you know. I think we're pretty much the people next door. You wouldn't recognize us if you saw us on the street, except unless maybe we were wearing some jewelry that set us apart or something.
What type of jewelry?
Oh, like a pentagram. A lot of witches will wear the silver pentagram in a circle. It's kind of akin to the cross of Christianity for us, and all that really represents is the elements in perfect balance: earth, air, fire, water, spirit. And in the center of the pentagram, where everything comes together and is in harmony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of my favorites is the elements that you are talking about are the five basic elements of Greek chemistry, of alchemy, even later on. And being a physicist, I say there are 92.
Well, I'm sure all 92 fit into one of those categories.
I wanted to ask you, why did the witch get hooked over? Why is the broomstick always, used in connection with witches?
Well, there's a lot of folklore that has to do with broomsticks. I think ultimately part of it has to do with the fact that it's the emblem of the home, the household, the mother, the wife. The broom itself was an implement of cleaning and of... A lot of people used it for luck. People would jump over it at wedding ceremonies for fertility. There's all kinds of little bits of folklore associated with the broom. Now, why particularly it was associated with witchcraft probably was because in its earliest forms, witchcraft was considered a woman's craft. It was something that, you know, the women were involved with, and there were the country healers and wise women and so on and so forth. And if they were seen dancing in the countryside or under the moon or something, jumping or stepping or whatever might look like they were leaping on something. And in fact, they may have very well have danced with their broom as part of the ceremony to sweep the space or whatever. It's a little uncertain because the history is kind of shaky. You get back so far and all you can really depend on is oral history. Obviously, if a woman is dancing with a broom in that aspect, the broom kind of symbolizes the male aspect and you have the balance there. But to people who are very superstitious, that would be kind of scary. It's like, what are they doing with that thing? You know, why are they out there with their brooms? It would look unusual and they wouldn't understand the symbolism behind it.
I have an even better question for you. How did witchcraft lose its credibility?
Wow. That's like opening a theological can of worms.
That's about what they were working with back then.
Yeah, really. When there were many years, the first thing you need to understand is that there isn't a fine line where magic ended and Christianity began. There is a time in the earlier histories of the church where magic and religion did work hand in hand. Monks would use charms and incantations and so on and so forth to heal people with. The magical association of herbs was used in healing. People would still go to cunning folk who sometimes added in, you know, the names of God, the angels, and whoever to empower what they were doing. Because what was happening was things were mingling. The old God on the scene and the new God on the scene had these years where the two were mixed together. And as the church gained power, slowly they had to find ways to dethrone the old gods and to make converts. And the best way to do that was through fear. So they took common pagan symbols like the horned god and turned them into something hideous, namely Satan. They took common pagan holidays and Christianized them. Christmas is probably one of the most apt things to talk about at this time of the year. Christmas is so pagan, it's crazy. Christ was born in August, so why is his birthday celebrated in December? Because December is the winter solstice, the birth of the sun. Now, this symbolism wasn't lost to the early theologians. They knew what the symbolism was, and by placing Christ's birthday at that time of the year, people were already into the celebration, they already followed this, they just were changing the name of the god that they were involved with so that it was easier to convert people and easier to make the transition. And as time wore on, they continued to do this. They Christianized more holidays and continued subjugating the old images of the divine so that the new god on the scene would have respectability. Unfortunately, what happened with witchcraft is the fact that a lot of the wise people and you know, simple country healers were also taking money away from the church. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm Christian bashing because I'm not. I think this happens with a lot of religious movements. you know, one comes in, the other moves out, and there is a financial end to running any faith, I think. But what happened was because the pagan faith and so on and so forth, a lot of these people had land that the church might have needed and so on and so forth, they would be labeled witches, which became a bad, nasty, evil thing. And so the church took over the land, took over the money that those lands were bringing in, and it slowly turned into the witch mania of the Middle Ages, where hundreds and thousands of people innocently lost their lives, many of whom probably didn't even know what magic was. So it took 2,000 years of bad press, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in many cases, this is another thing I've heard, witches don't necessarily see a conflict between what they do and what is practiced by most of the major religions. Unfortunately, you will see, especially the fundamentalists in the various religions, obviously this is not restricted to Christians.
That's right.
They will say that that is not the case. Okay, now, where would the potential... Well, what's the best way to say it? Where did the whole idea that witches were sort of satanic really come into play? As opposed, we already said that one of the horned god was identified as Satan, and everybody had their different kinds of gods. So where do the witches really derive from?
Well, essentially it was the transition from taking the image of the horned god and making it into something that was evil. So therefore, the people who worshipped that image were likewise evil. That really is as simple as it gets, because the horned god was so central to the worship at that time. It represented man's link to nature. Okay, the importance of the land, the importance of our connection to the land. And that was an extremely important symbol to the people, especially when you're talking about a highly agrarian community.
Mm-hmm.
And they worshipped that image, and because that image had been changed into something hideous and horrible and evil, the people who worshipped that image were likewise evil. And that's really where it all got started. The whole misconcept of witches worshipping Satan started in that seed, that change. And it's not something, again, it's not something that happened overnight. It happened over hundreds of years. But it did occur.
Now,
I don't know what the earliest time that you know of, you know, where witches are mentioned in, you know, some historical context. But the one that I thought of, the earliest that I could think of, was the portrait of the three witches at the beginning of Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Right.
That's the,
I don't know what year that was, but that was the earliest I could think of.
That would be late 1500s.
Right.
I mean, I think there's another thing, too, of when the word witch began used. I mean, we know that the word witch is used in the modern Bible, but, however, the translations of that word are kind of iffy at best. There are some other theories as to what the proper translation of the term is. There are certainly images associated with magic dating back to early civilizations. At the turn of the century, people did all sorts of things that were what we would consider magical, but the word witch and magic never entered into the picture. So maybe a lot depends on the time period that you were living in.
Well, I'll give you one of the favorite examples. Late 1600s in Salem.
Yes.
Okay. Now, There are a lot of different ideas, different beliefs on how that whole thing broke out, but the way it seems, having read and seen The Crucible and having read on the history of that particular point in time, it would seem that witchery was used as in the same way that being an enemy of the people was used in the French and Russian revolutions.
Oh, certainly.
Basically, to eliminate certain elements of society that certain other elements of society didn't go for.
Yes, you're very correct. And that's exactly what happened. And a lot of it happened out of fear and misunderstanding. And then you get this emotional swell that happens, and all of a sudden people who would normally not even do something like that got involved, because if they didn't, they would be implicated, and then they would end up being put on the stand and being accused. So you have a lot of innocent people getting involved in something they would normally never even consider doing, out of fear of the repercussions if they didn't. And it becomes a fever of sorts.
Hmm. Yeah. We're
so
getting out of politics,
people had
though.
People had to turn these witches in, and if they didn't, they would get in trouble themselves?
If they stood up for someone, for example, you know, say Mary was accused of being a witch, and you stood up for her and said, no, I mean, I've never seen her do any of the things that you're accusing her of, and you tried to help her, you would more than likely end up accused yourself. That's one of the things that happened during the witch trials. People were afraid. They were very, very afraid. And so a lot of innocent lives were lost because individuals were afraid to come forward and say, no, this is wrong, because if they did, the inquisitors would then accuse them.
Now, let's get out of the politics a bit.
Yeah, really, this is getting heavy.
Yeah, we are starting to get... We are starting to get into the what people know and what versus what people should know, which is what we're here for. I shouldn't ask what is witchcraft, but I'm going to, because there are a lot of people who are still thinking, rides a broom, has a green face, wears this peaked cap.
Oh, there are a lot of different forms of witchcraft. I should tell you that right off. The best I can do for you is tell you how I approach witchcraft. Ultimately, it is a nature religion. It's a religion that does not worship nature per se, but has a deep abiding respect for the earth and for nature. Witchcraft honors the deity or the divine being as being both male and female in essence, generally called god and goddess. You can put any other traditional god and goddess name on that, but
yin and yang,
you know, that's the essential factor. The basic tenets of witchcraft are to harm none, not to manipulate, you know, and essentially witchcraft is no different than any other religion in that it strives to help us find a way to make sense of things, to take more control over our lives and over our future and over our reality, and make us the best people that we can be in the process. You know, the job of faith years and years and years ago wasn't to build walls between people, it was to take them down. We've kind of switched it around.
Yeah.
I don't think that if anyone came to my house and saw me meditating or performing a ritual, that they would see anything too much different than you might see in, like, an old Catholic Latin Mass, lighting candles, praying, you know, repeating a mantra is very similar to a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, invocations and incantations. Well, when you invoke God, aren't you praying? Aren't you supplicating? Aren't you asking for aid?
Now, where does the tradition, at least the one that you practice, derive from?
I'm a kitchen witch. I take and blend the best of everything that I find and put it in one big pot and make it work.
Because I know there are several.
Yeah, there's quite a few, and the reason I say that is because there are a lot of different magical traditions, but I've found that, you know, we're all such unique individuals. It's just like expecting every single person from one particular church that you meet to think exactly the same thing. You know, that's not going to happen, and the same thing goes true for magic. And in fact, magical traditions encourage people to really find their own way and to get creative and try and blend the best of what they come across into a harmonic spiritual system that really works for them. So I can't say that my tradition originated back in ancient Egypt and has been practiced for hundreds of thousands of years, because that wouldn't be the truth. I know that a lot of the things that I draw on come from, say, Celtic folklore and English folklore and, you know, even some, you know, modern New Age ideology.
That's even more interesting that you mentioned New Age ideology, which means that the practice, the magic, is constantly evolving.
Yes, and I think that's essential. I mean, if a religion doesn't grow with you and grow with a changing world, it becomes stagnant and dies. You know, we are going, the planet and people as a group of people, we are going through changes so incredibly rapidly these days on a technological, sociological level, that if we don't have a religion that can grow with that pace, it's going to die. We have to be able to meet the changing face of our world creatively and effectively. The things that were done 500 years ago, in many respects, don't make sense now. You know, we have a lot more people that we're dealing with, a lot busier schedules, and everyone is doing this juggling act and trying to find a way to fit spirituality into that picture somehow. And it isn't easy. It isn't easy for anybody.
I remember one term that you did mention, Wiccan.
Yes.
Could you explain that?
It basically means, it comes from the term wise craft, or wise one, or craft of the wise. And quite literally, it stems back to very simple people who use their knowledge of the land, of herbs, of nature's cycle, for the betterment of their home, their family, and their community. You know, someone might, in your community, may have been very gifted with herbs, and you would have gone to them to get, you know, things to cure the calf and to take care of the cold. You know, if for some reason you wanted to know how to get pregnant, which was very important several hundred years ago, you would go see old Dame Haggerty down the road, and she would give you this tea that would fix you right up. Or you might go see Martha to have your tea leaves read, or whatever. Everyone seemed to have like this little niche, then, and they had one or two specialties, and people in the community would go to them for that. It wasn't considered really what you might call hocus pocus at that time. It was just very natural. They were observant, and they passed on family knowledge from one person to another. And yeah, they would stir in their little spells as they went, but for them it was just a natural thing to do. It wasn't something that should be feared. It was a tradition that had come down to them from their fathers and fathers and fathers and fathers.
That's a good one that you touched on right there. What exactly is a spell?
Generally defined, spells are will-driven mechanisms. Basically, it is a means of trying to obtain a specific goal, but without the normal material means playing a real part in it. Spells can take an awful lot of forms, so getting into the technicalities of that would be really time-consuming.
One of the favorites is the old line from Monty Python, "Oh, she turned me into a newt!" I
don't think you'll see anybody doing that these days. However, you know, you might, for example, a little spell that I do at home sometimes when finances are tight, so I take a green candle, green is associated with money,
mm-hmm.
and I might, you know, carve prosperity into the candle with a little pin or knife or whatever, then anoint the candle with patchouli oil, and patchouli, according to folklore and, you know, magical correspondences, again, is a prosperity drawing scent, and then light it with a little prayer. And then as the flame burns and the patchouli smokes, the old belief was when they burned incense that released your prayers to the gods. Now, that seems very simple, but what it does is it changes your perspective. All of a sudden, you stop being a victim and start becoming an active participant in your future and say, well, I can do this. It makes you feel more positive about what you're doing. And the minute you start feeling more positive, you start acting differently, and you can go out with more, if you'll excuse the expression, a better attitude, the power of positive thinking, if you will. And you take that energy with you, and sure enough, usually what you're looking for follows from that point. Call it magic. Call it a change in the way you approach things. I don't care as long as it works.
Just to give an interesting parallel, I was walking by the New York Foundling Hospital in Manhattan over on, I believe it's 6th Avenue. Anyway, no, actually it's not, but it's around the 17th, 18th Street area. And they're celebrating their 125th anniversary.
Wow.
And this gets better. It was founded by a member of the Sisters of Charity, of course, a Catholic order of nuns, founded by Mother Seton, for whom Seton Hall is named. Had to throw that in. Anyway, the point was that one of the nuns, I forget her name, and I'll probably be cursed for that. anyway, when she founded the hospital, her mother superior gave her a $5 bill, said, this is all I have. This, you know, just to help her get started. And in 1869, $5 was a pretty good start. Anyway, she wrote on the $5 bill, if it be God's will, then this $5 bill will extend itself, so to speak. In other words,
yes.
the old parable about the bread and the fish.
Yes.
Exactly. Very similar.
Very, very much
very
similar.
Very similar.
And you'll find parallels in almost every country around the globe. Symbols are extremely important to us on a conscious and subconscious level. And if you don't think that's the case, just see the difference in your mood when you stay in different colored rooms for a while. If you go into a dark room, if you constantly work in a dark office, you tend not to be as upbeat as you are if you have windows, good lighting, bright colors. I mean, this is just color is just one thing that acts on us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start combining all the different symbols that are available to you into a religious system that allows you to act out your needs and tap divine energy and reach out to the universe and say, hey, I need help. And then you act on the conviction that you believe that your actions have been heard, are being worked on, that energy's out there, it changes things. It may not change them overnight, but it will change them.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a lot like, well, I guess it's the same thing. It's invoking the spirits to help you, which is, there was some book written, I guess it was called The Game of Life by Florence Scoville Shin, and she, you know, gave examples in the Bible for speaking the word, for gaining things like prosperity and money.
Yeah.
You know, and that was, you know, written in the 1920s, and I would gather that at that time they would look, you know, fundamentalists would have scoffed at that and said, you know, that's absolutely a desecration.
Actually, you probably would have found that the people of the 1920s were more open-minded than we are. I got a hold of a phone book from the turn of the century here in Buffalo, and psychics were listed in the yellow pages. So it tells you how much things have changed in 100 years.
Well, also, there's another favorite of mine. Here I am, taking something out of one of the Gospels. Of course, not being the expert that I guess Jack Van Impe is, I can't quote the particular passage. But the instance where Christ himself did an exorcism. So even in the, I'm using Christianity as the parallel because the majority of the people in the United States at least have that background. So, yes, the same things were going on, and I could almost say, knowing what I know now, that that was legitimizing the spirituality that had gone on beforehand, only that his was, I guess, better or whatever.
And actually, if you think about it, Jesus was Jewish. Jesus wasn't Christian.
That's right. Everybody who followed him became.
People forget about
that.
That's
right. And, of course, the spirituality of Judaism.
He was still working under Old Testament law, and he had a lot of very good things to say. Christ taught the law of love and the law of forgiveness, and there is nothing wrong with those two concepts whatsoever. I have a great deal of respect for those teachings. If you look at some of the things he did, they were very, very powerful symbols. You talked about the loaves and fish already. Well, what is bread? Bread is the staff of life. It is the thing that has kept people alive through the years because it is, you know, fundamentally grain, which grows almost everywhere. The fish, the symbol of fertility, of growth among humankind. That was a very powerful symbol, and it probably was even more meaningful to them.
But even in that time, even in that part of the world, of course, because being, again, Israel did actually exist as an entity. The Jews exist as a people who had a homeland at the time, even though it was occupied by Rome. That existed. The magic and the spirituality of the Judaism of the time existed then. Which I guess we need to elaborate on a bit.
I don't know if I understand what you're asking.
I'm saying that I guess the what would probably be called witchcraft by someone who is opposed to it wouldn't realize that that existed then among monotheistic peoples.
Oh, certainly. That was definitely there. Especially during that time when you were dealing with, you know, merchants were starting to travel more, people were beginning to intermingle more. So there was this tremendous exchange of information and ideology going on. The more people interacted, the more ideas and folklore and superstition got intermingled. I mean, why do you think that a lot of the herbal folklore and superstition that exists in Europe came from Arabia, excuse me. I'm having trouble talking tonight.
Mm-hmm.
When the Mongol invaders came up, they brought their superstitions with them, and they became intermixed. We are not a people alone. We don't live on islands, and everything that was going on then, just as now, We pick up things from here and there, and we become this mixture, this potpourri, if you will, of ideas and experiences. And they weren't doing anything different than we were, just on a smaller scale.
Mm-hmm. I've got another one for you. What exactly, in Celtic folklore in particular, what is exactly a fairy?
An elemental creature. Now, I was in Scotland about 10 years ago and talking to some of the people of the Highlands, and they told me that originally fairies were not the little itty-bitty creatures that we portray them as now. They were actually originally larger and more beautiful than any human because they are so strongly tied to nature, and their power and their beauty derives from nature. For example, you would have the flower fairies, and the flower fairies would be very beautiful and would look like the plant that they were associated with, or the mountain fairies, which would be very robust. But they all had their place, and they kind of kept an eye on things, if you were. They didn't like lazy people and would pull the wool over their eyes and do all these little things to trick them and so on and so forth. But I guess, you know, in New Age terminology, you might even call them like divas. Not gods per se, but something between human and divine on a spiritual level. Am I making sense?
Yes. Another word that's often used for that is nymph.
Yeah. They're basically elemental creatures. And depending on where you're coming from, there are versions of them in a lot of different bits of folklore. You know, slightly different descriptions and so on and so forth. But there is a continuity of ideas about, you know, these creatures that somehow exist on a slightly different plane, yet intermingle with people periodically, as if when, you know, when the veil between worlds is thin, if you'll excuse that expression, they sneak in every once in a while to play with us.
Uh-huh.
They probably would do so more often if we were open to that experience.
This is WUSB Stony Brook. The time is now 1:02. We're speaking with Trish Telesco, a noted expert on witchcraft and other related things, and several things, as you probably noticed if you've been listening, are related to it. And I guess we can get into really, really technical details, but one other favorite that I have is... Well, I'm not going to get into the Psychic Friends Network. As a matter of fact, I'll bet you Dionne Warwick is on TV right now on some obscure cable channel talking about it. So those of you who want to know about that, turn your TV on, and you can actually turn it on while you're listening to this and watch her and listen to us at the same time. You'll probably learn a bit more here. But psychics being able to, A, predict the future, or B, contact the spirits of the past, namely the dead, where does that come from, and how exactly, does it work?
Okay. Psychic phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to come at this from an anthropological, psychological angle for a second, if you don't mind. I was recently doing some research, and I think most people are familiar with Jung's terminology, the collective unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
In anthropology, there is a theory that states that there is like a psychic pool, if you will, to humankind. And that if more than one person goes to that pool at the same time, they draw the same information and return to their setting with it. Which is why you get the flood myth in so many different cultures. There's scientific evidence for that one, too, but that's a good example. Now, if people can go to that pool and draw specific information, then they also can probably look at the pool or send waves off over across the pool. So basically, this translates into what a psychic basically does is they are simply more aware of the movements of the water in that overall psychic pool than most people are. And they have this ability to tap into it and follow it in on its natural course, like a riverbed might.
Mm-hmm.
People who are able to see in the future and do so accurately follow that river a little further than you or I might be able to.
Yeah.
For some reason, they just have a feeling for where that current is going. I can't explain why they have that ability. It just seems to be something some people are able to do. Not everyone who professes to be a psychic is, obviously.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who are just in it to hop on the bandwagon and make a few bucks. And that's going to happen. But I do believe that there are very adept psychics living that are very good at what they do, but you probably won't see most of them advertised on TV anywhere. These are people who generally work one-on-one with friends or people who are referred to them and do it specifically to help an individual who really needs some perspective that they can't get on their own. Psychic phenomena was never meant to be a guru thing. You know, it's not a way of saying, oh, tell me what I should do with my life because you have to make that decision. That's
right.
Not a psychic's job. You know, their only job is to tell you, you know, if they're looking into the future, their job is to try and discern the most plausible future for you considering circumstances at that moment. Tomorrow, everything could change because you're a free person with free will.
See, that's the best explanation I've heard yet. A lot of people are thinking that psychics can predict the future no matter what, and this is going to happen no matter what.
No.
Not understanding the fact that what the psychic, I guess, is actually doing is what people try to do on Wall Street every day. take actually the flow of information, the flow of events, trends.
And follow it to its most logical course.
And, again, sometimes they succeed and sometimes things change. And
exactly.
Yeah, some
are
better at than others.
What changes those items are the individuals. And then you get a bunch of individuals interacting with each other, and that makes the future an even more uncertain place. My best way of describing it is to think of it in terms of a half-finished tapestry. And you are one thread in that tapestry, and every other individual on the face of this planet is one thread in that tapestry. But the end and the future is just dangling, and it doesn't get woven until tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
When you get up, and then your thread starts moving again, and everyone else, other threads move start moving together, and they make the picture for that day. Every moment, the tapestry is being woven, but it isn't woven until that moment occurs.
Yeah, that's another thing that has its base in physics, too. One favorite that physicists like to relate that is that, you know, some point in time, the sun is going to turn into a supernova, explode, absorb all the Earth and all its life with it. We don't know when, but we know it will happen because it's happened so many times before with every other star in the galaxy.
Right.
So it's going to happen. I guess it's not a lot different.
No, actually, my best friend is a physicist, and she has found that the more she studied, the more it brings her back to a theological ideology.
Mm-hmm.
Because in her mind, the two really do work together very well.
Yeah.
If you allow yourself to see that perspective. So I understand where you're coming from.
Another one that earned my brother, who is also a physicist, the Golden Shovel Award in his high school. The universe is an atom in the body of God. Not the universe, this particular star is an atom in the body of God.
Ah, yes.
People naturally refer to that as something worthy of a golden shovel.
Actually, I kind of like the allegorical image, especially now that they've found that when you start patterning the placement of galaxies and so on and so forth in the universe, it begins to look quite a bit like a DNA strand.
Really?
Yes.
Ah, so he wasn't so far off after all. I think I do believe there's a Nobel Prize in it somewhere for him.
It returns the old idea of the microcosm and macrocosm. The further in you go, the further out you go.
Yeah. It's another thing we learned, too. Drove us nuts. But the thing that really drove us nuts, more so than anything, is that one thing that physicists like to do, especially on the undergraduate level, actually I've sat in on a few grad courses too, and they do it there too, is confuse the entire issue with math. I think I'll stick to witchcraft.
Yeah, we can spend a whole night on math alone.
What is the concept of what does that mean when you go the further in, the further out you go?
Basically, you're talking about infinity in both directions. You know, we know that now science can get down to quarks on the atomic level, but what's inside the quarks, and why, you know, down, down, down. And likewise, when you go out, it continues to grow and get larger and larger. And basically, the theory of microcosm and macrocosm is that everything is part of something greater. And the greater thing is made up of smaller things, which is made up of smaller things. So, and basically, you're going in both directions. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Sort of, except that, like, if you were to go into a smaller space, let's say you as a human being got like smaller and smaller,
right,
in the same space. Now I can see, of course, you're getting smaller, but now how? Oh, I see. Well, then
the smaller you get, you find yourself in a new space.
Yeah, and the smaller you get, the larger things get, of course.
And when you make it to the new space looks perfectly normal.
Mm. I see.
Because now it you are on its level. It's one of those things to think about on a very rainy, sunny afternoon and just do your universal pondering.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Unfortunately, if you went to school for physics, you wasted a lot of very sunny afternoons in the libraries trying to figure a lot of that stuff out. Yeah. Again, that's another thing that we never really... That's one of the things that I guess was a... I don't know if it was necessarily a failing on our part as students or on the professor's part. They very rarely got into the spiritual part of what we were doing. We were so busy trying to figure the math out. And I think guys like Richard Feynman, I'm sure you're familiar with him, did a very good job of expressing.
I'm sorry, I don't know the name, but...
Richard Feynman? Richard Feynman died about a couple of years ago. He was not only one of the most brilliant physicists of our time, worked on everything from the... Was he involved in the Manhattan Project? He worked on from the H-bomb to every other phenomenon that's been discovered in the past 40 or 50 years. But not only was he a great physicist, but he had a way of expressing what he knew, imparting knowledge that was, I guess, unprecedented. His lectures on physics have been filmed, have been printed word for word, transcribed for generations to come, and they are constantly referred to this day and probably will be for generations. This guy was good. This guy was good. Matter of fact, I had the privilege of having seen some of his lectures. Let's see. I'm trying to remember if he ever visited Stony Brook during the time I've been here. He may have.
What's wrong?
One of the questions I actually wanted to ask you was, essentially, would you go, like, if you wanted to go to a psychic, you would go, you know, as you explained. Could you then also, I mean, do witches now advertise for the same thing? Can you go for the same things?
We network more than we advertise for obvious reasons. You know, if you stop and edit a New Age bookstore, or if you, some health food stores will have information for you. It's generally we recommend that you network through other people that you know, get, you know, recommendations of individuals that they feel are, you know, worth, you know, good to go to, that seem to have their act together, that are fair and balanced in the way they present their information. I mean, it's like anything else. Price doesn't ensure quality out there.
Huh. Yeah.
How about, let's talk a little bit about seances.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there isn't really a set way to do one, is there?
Very carefully.
Again, a total mystery to me.
I don't encourage people to go out hunting for spirits unless they really want to find one.
Uh-huh.
And not necessarily the one they were looking for. Not everyone that you know is skilled enough in spiritual realms to be able to go out and contact the dead. Now, people are dead for a reason, folks. Their spirits have moved on. If the spirit is hanging around and you need to find out why and help it release itself, that's one thing. But I think sometimes we get a little too fixated on the afterlife. I know we want to know what happens over there, but people who are dead are no more wise about life than we are. They probably have to come back again, too. I think, you know, a lot of times people go to ghosts and say, oh, you know, grandmother or whoever, you know, give us the secrets of the universe. Well, grandma probably doesn't know. Grandma's floating around out there waiting for a new body so that she can finish her learning. And I don't know, I'm very cautious about seances because too many things can happen that become misinterpreted as a spiritual sign or whatever, because people want so much to have a spiritual experience that sometimes their own telekinetic ability might kick in and, you know, something move or a knock be heard or whatever. And it's not anything that an individual might even purposely do, but because they're so focused on one particular thing happening that something does happen. The best example of this is probably the use of the Ouija board, where certain people who have an ability in that area, an innate ability they may not even be aware of, might move the little pointer around the board, the flashette, without realizing it, and thereby they are portraying what they want to see in that response. So you see what I'm saying here?
Mm-hmm.
There are real mediums. There are people who can connect with the spirit world and do so very well. However, it should not be undertaken by someone who doesn't know what they're doing. And I always would say, if you go to someone for that type of thing, take what they say with a grain of salt. Think about it. See if it really makes sense, because you could just be getting random information.
I just read that every Halloween, people try and contact the spirit of Harry Houdini.
Oh, God, every Halloween people try and contact just about everybody. It's probably the most psychically active day of the year. Halloween is the old Celtic New Year, and it was a time when they thought that the world of life and death were much closer together, because the old year was fading away and the new year was coming. And, you know, spirits could walk and visit families, and they would leave out food for their deceased family members on a window ledge or whatever, so that the ghost would be appeased and not do anything to disrupt the harmony of the home. This has led to what we see now as general Halloween observances. But to be perfectly honest with you, I don't celebrate Halloween until about a week later when it's all died down. Which I know, coming from a witch, probably sounds odd.
Well, as you said, I guess the date for Halloween isn't really etched in stone. Interesting how it was chosen, though. But it's also true, Halloween is pretty much celebrated in only the English-speaking countries, am I right?
I'm going to have to backtrack a little bit here. A lot of ancient cultures associated the season of fall and winter with death in the underworld, because darkness became more prevalent during that time of the year.
Right.
So there are a lot of instances where, you know, the Scottish have a version of it, the Italians, the Mexicans have a version of it. The Egyptians had a Day of the Dead. there, almost every culture has some form of celebration that is close to or similar to what Halloween remembers. You know, honoring the dead, honoring the change of the season. It wasn't anything as scary or as spooky as we tend to think of it. For some reason, it's taken on this terribly nasty connotation, more than likely because of the kids who are running around the neighborhood breaking windows.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things I love was when I was reading recently, in Mexico, November 1st is the day that they celebrate their Halloween, and they go and have picnics at the cemetery to share their food with loved ones. And then they put out sweets and special toys along with marigold petals and firecrackers up to the doorway of their home because the spirits of their departed children can come home and visit them that night. I thought that was so neat.
That's interesting.
Instead of trying to frighten away the spirits there, they're actually welcoming them.
Yeah. Still the Christian Feast of All Saints, so they do it on the actual day, and Halloween, of course, it derives from All Hallows' Eve.
And more than likely, that's why the Feast of All Saints is placed there.
Yeah.
Figure after all that hoopla with all the spirits running around, they had to get things calmed down.
Yeah. And I'm not familiar with the history. I always thought that exactly was it, that the Feast of All Saints was set on the end of the Celtic year, and the night before was the old thing with the dead. I guess.
Yeah, and that's probably exactly why, but I really believe that that's why the date was placed there.
Yeah.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah.
Do you think... I was suggesting that maybe we take some calls if people have questions.
I'd love to. The only trouble is that what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to put you guys on hold, then take the question from the caller, and then repeat it back to you when I put you back on the line.
Mm.
Because I can, of course, put people together with you. The only trouble is then what do you do? How do you get rid of them?
That's fine. It's up to you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to put you on hold right now. I'm going to take a break here. The time is now 1:23, and then I have to use the old time dilation factor, put everything in delay when I take calls. So I'm going to put you on hold for a second, folks. Hang on. They are there. We are here. The name of the show is Brain Damage. The name of me is Matt. The name of you is... something you can keep a secret, because you rarely, very, very rarely do people ever tell me their real names on this show. They like to go nameless, whatever. Anyway, 1:23, I will be back momentarily. Maybe.
Hi there. This is Adam West of Batman, and you too can feel like a hero if you listen to Destiny's The Voice of Science Fiction every Friday at 11:30 p.m. on 90.1 FM, WUSB Stony Brook. Same bat time, same bat station.
This is Michael Dorn of Star Trek The Next Generation, and your hailing frequencies are open to 90.1 FM, WUSB, Stony Brook, where every Friday night at 11:30, Destinies, the voice of science fiction, goes where no radio show has gone before.
Hi, folks. It's me again. Yeah, you know, the time dilation factor got a little squooey here. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, 7-second delay and all that funny stuff going on. But, of course, with me, the poetry guy and Trish Telesco, and also Jim. And, Jim, what would you like to ask?
Can you really cast spells on people?
Can you really cast spells on people? Hang on, Jim. We'll find out. Can you really cast spells on people?
I'm sorry?
Can you really cast spells on people?
Can I? I can, but I don't.
No.
Okay.
There's, as I said, one of the reads of magic is to harm none. And you never violate someone else's free will. That's a big no-no. That's considered manipulation. If someone wants you, you know, says, you know, I'm really having trouble in this area. Would you mind performing a little magic for me? That's different. They've asked for the help. Or you might say, you know, I know you're having problems here. Would you like me to try and help a little bit? If they say yes, that's fine. That's not interfering with their free will. And it's very akin to asking someone to pray for you, if you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially the same thing. Just a slightly different method is being used. So, yes, I can, but no, I don't.
Okay. Are there some witches who wouldn't flinch at casting a spell on someone?
Not white witches. Okay. I mean, I'm not going to tell you there aren't people out there who aren't practicing gray or darker arts, because there are. I mean, wherever you have good, you're going to have the other side of the coin. But the reality of the situation is that the people who are above board and are truly, truly walking a what we would call a white, you know, a white path would not consider doing that, not without permission, or not without, you know, say, for example, someone's far away and you know they're having trouble. In that instance, you might do something for them, but release it in such a manner that when you end the prayer or your spell or however you want to term it, you would say, if this is for the greatest good, you know, guide this energy, guide this prayer, so that you leave it open-ended. If it isn't something that is correct for that individual, if it isn't for the greatest good, that the energy just disperses and it doesn't go anywhere. It's very important to be real careful with that stuff. You don't want to go messing around with somebody else's path and life if it isn't any of your business to be there.
Okay. Hang on just a minute, folks. I'm just going to take another caller.
Okay.
Okay, and who is waiting here? Brain damage.
Hey, what's up, Matt?
What would you like to ask?
I got a question for you.
Okay.
I didn't catch the show last week because I had to work, right?
Okay.
And what I heard from a couple of people that were on, who were listening, you extended this contest, right?
Yes, I did.
You know, when is it going to end?
It's ending tonight.
Right?
Yes.
Like, today's the last day and you can ask the winner at the end of the show or something?
Actually, what I'm going to do is, at the top of the hour, which is exactly 32 minutes from now, when we switch back to standard time, I will announce the winners. I have chosen them.
You've chosen them. Okay.
I have chosen the winners.
Do you mind if I ask how many letters you ended up getting? Or?
I guess rough estimate would be around 15.
Really? Because I know I dropped mine off. If you didn't get it, I'm going to be pissed.
Okay, how long ago did you do it?
It was last Friday. I dropped it right off at the station.
I got it. Okay?
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Wait, no, hello.
What?
I want to ask a question to the witch.
Okay.
All right, witch, all right? Yeah, she can't hear me, right?
No, I have to repeat it back to her, so make sure I get it.
It's three things, really. First, how can I become a witch? Not that I want to, but how can someone become a witch?
Uh-huh.
Second, how old is she?
Uh-huh.
Third, I have a friend, right, who lives near the Sod Farms up by exit 73 on the LAE.
She's from Buffalo, not familiar with it.
Well, can she, like, put a spell on that so the Sod Farms do better?
Okay.
Can she do that?
I can give you the answer to number three already. I think she can. But anyway, let's go to the, let's go back to
I'll call
Trish
you
here.
At the top of the hour.
Okay, see ya. Okay. Hi, Trish.
Hi.
Okay. It's a three-part question. One, how does one become a witch?
That's interesting. It's not like you convert to witchcraft, okay? I don't want to make it sound like, you know, most religions, there's a very specific, you know, you get baptized, you do this, you do that, and then wham, bam, boom. To my way of thinking, witchcraft is a way of living, of being, of thinking. You know, you can... you know, you can talk the talk but not walk the walk kind of thing.
Right.
And witchcraft isn't that way. It's a philosophy as well as a religion. And basically, it was a process for me. I started out getting interested in New Age ideology, and from there I met some people who were involved in witchcraft. And the more I talked to them, the more I realized that what they were saying to me were things that I believed since I was a little girl, but I didn't have anyone who had put a name on it before. So for me, it was that moment that I said, that's it, that I basically said, that is what I am. Mm-hmm. That is what I want to be. Now, there are magical paths where you become initiated, which I guess basically is akin to, you know, being baptized. It's a moment where after your training and your education in that particular path, you are accepted as a full functional member of that group. I work alone, so I don't know about that specific approach to magic. To me, witchcraft, as I said, is a way of life. It is not something I do once and forget about, and that, you know, hey, I'm going to go and I'm going to do this and then I'll be a witch and then I forget about it and go on living my life the same old way. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. It's part of everything that I am. So I guess, you know, essentially, if you find that magical ideas work for you and you want to study and learn more and go in that direction, and you are willing to follow the basic tenets that say, you know, do as you will but harm none. Realize that the responsibility for your life lays in your lap. You are the enabler. You are the magic. You are the source of magic. And it's your will that puts energy into motion. From that point forward, whatever direction you take is up to you. You can follow a specific path. You know, shamanistic traditions have very strong similar qualities to witchcraft. While you might not call a shaman a witch, there are a lot of things that shamans do that witches do. So there's a lot of crossover. I think it's just a matter of nomenclature. You know, why do you call yourself a witch? I don't know. Why does someone call themselves a Christian? It's because that is the word that they have chosen to associate themselves with.
Mm-hmm.
Is that making sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
The second question, I think, is related to some of the typical witchcraft myths. How old are you?
34.
Okay. And the third question was... A friend of this caller owns a sod pitch further out on the island, and he was wondering if you could cast a spell so it would do better. And I said, that's definitely not out of the realm of what witches do.
What is a sod pitch?
It's just a field where you grow sod, grass, and sod for obviously to put lawns in and houses and things like that.
Oh, I wish I had that recipe right under my nose. I came across a wonderful recipe for a tincture that you can blend very easily with a spell that helps keep insects away and also fertilize the land.
Really?
And it's pretty easy to make up in large batches, but I don't have the recipe right under my nose. If that person's still listening, tell them to write to me at Llewellyn. The address there is Post Office Box 64383, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55164. Have them restate the question. I'll send them the recipe and instructions on how to use it.
Okay.
It's really simple. It's all herbal, all natural, and I'll explain how to blend in positive visualization and maybe a little incantation or something they can do themselves, because I think it's very important. If this is something that they own, they should do this themselves. Like in Rome, the people who owned land would go out once a year and beat the bounds. They would decorate all of their boundaries with wreaths, and they would pray and mark their land and bless their land and walk around it clockwise to bring protection and richness to the soil. And it was very important that they did that, because it was kind of like not only marking their territory, but they were continuing to be involved in that area's well-being and reestablishing their connection with the land. And I think by doing this, it will help continue that thing. I really like putting it into people's hands themselves and saying, here, you do it.
Gives them a feeling of participation, too.
It's important.
Yeah.
It's very important. Otherwise, it's like, well, if it does get better, well, that's because so-and-so did this. No, if it gets better, it's because you did this.
Mm-hmm.
You see the difference?
Yeah. What's a medium?
That's so important for people.
Mm-hmm. What's a medium?
Was that the third part?
The third part was the sod pitch.
Okay.
That's my question. What is a medium?
What's a medium?
Yeah.
It's a person who can act as basically a telephone system to the dead.
Uh-huh.
She calls them up, he calls them up, they answer.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's a little better than poor. Sorry. That was a bad pun.
I have a good one for you. One of the favorites that's been going on, especially in the world of sports, teams that have not won in a very long time, our own New York Rangers here, who finally broke the so-called spell last year, the Cleveland Indians for another, and of course you can go throughout the history of sports. One of the favorite rituals that happened in Cleveland every year was that they would bring a witch or a medium or somebody to remove the curse that has befallen Cleveland since 1954. They haven't been in a World Series since then. And it gets better. They say the reason why this team has not been in a World Series since 1954, where they lost in embarrassing fashion, by the way, so the curse goes back further, was because the manager at the time, Al Lopez, was fired, and he cursed the team, saying that they would never win again. Here's the question. How do you go about removing a spell once it's been cast?
First of all, recognize the fact that no one has the right to do that to you.
Uh-huh.
Half of the power of curses is your belief of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like the placebo thing.
Yeah, attention Red Sox fans. Go on.
You believe that something will help you, more than likely you'll feel better. If you believe that something's going to hurt you, more than likely you're going to feel worse. The power of the human mind is not something to be underestimated, and I think any psychologist worth their degree will agree with that statement. We talk ourselves in and out of things a lot. And if somebody says, well, we're cursed and that's it, and why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, why bother?
Yep, and I guess there are plenty of people, especially several friends of mine, who went through that entire drought with the Rangers, at least, thinking just that.
You know, and it really is. It's kind of like the thing we had going up here for a while. Nobody thought that Buffalo would make it to the Super Bowl that many times.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's a little bit of a weird miracle. But they thought they could do it, so they did it.
It's even weirder miracles. They would lose all four times.
Hey, nobody is perfect, you know. But the point is that it is the element of belief for a great deal of part that is what makes curses functional. Now, I won't say that there aren't ways to curse people or things, because I do believe there are, but I don't think it isn't done without a cost. You know, we have something called the threefold law. Whatever you send back will come to you, back to you three times. That's not the kind of thing I want to get back three times. Uh-huh. Thank you very much. You know, but I'm sure that, you know, there are people who do that. And in that instance, you have to start looking at what people have traditionally done to protect themselves through the ages, and what makes you feel safe. You know, a lot of teams have mascots. Mascots date back to fetishes. the carrying of something that is a person, that is an image of personal power. Why do you think sports teams have all those powerful names?
Mm-hmm.
It all wraps into the same thing. So, you know, essentially they need to start thinking about, if they really do think they're cursed, what do they feel they need to do to change their luck? You know, card players, when they used to have a streak of bad luck, would turn their chair around. Or a housewife would turn their apron inside out. I mean, these sound strange, but it's a symbol of turning something around, turning something inside out. It's changing the direction of the energy. Maybe they all need to wear their uniforms inside out. I don't know.
Well, actually that's
baseball
happened.
Players always grow beards or shave or something.
Or another favorite is the old rally cap. The player would turn his cap inside out.
Yes,
you've seen that. Baseball players especially, but of course it's not limited to just baseball players, are among the most superstitious people in general you will find anywhere.
Baseball's a big one.
Oh, one of my favorites there are several favorites. One is Sandy Koufax would not shave for at least 2 days prior to pitching. That's one. Another one would be, this is a constant ongoing belief, is that ball players believe there are a finite number of hits in each bat they use.
Hmm.
And once they've exhausted their quota of hits from each bat, they don't use it again. They don't necessarily discard the bat, but they might give it away to a fan or something like that. But that's it. That's as many as you can get out of it.
Oh, do you want to catch the line? Or is it gone? Oh, okay.
Let's see. There are several others that I can think of. Wade Boggs of the Yankees eats only chicken. Will not eat any other kind of meat. I don't know if that's necessarily superstition or plain preference, but...
They
just say it makes
him
hit better and it works. So. Yeah, it does work. Let's see, what else? What other crazy superstitions? The dirtier superstitions, like not changing your socks while you're on a hitting streak. there are others. not changing uniforms is one of the least desirable of the superstitions that does go on. At least as long as your teammates can stand you. It does go on and on. Approaching the field a certain way. Wearing your uniform a certain way.
Sure.
In football, that happens a lot. There was a fellow named Fred Biletnikoff who has kept his teammates rich because of all the stories he has enabled them to tell about him. One of his favorites was that he would keep enough sets of jerseys and pants to make 5 uniforms. And he would wear a different combination for every game. And he'd have a very set procedure of how he would go about selecting it and how he would put it on. And if you marred his uniform in any way before a game began, he'd have to go back and do it all over again.
Wow. Did you want to try and catch a couple of those calls?
Yeah. Hang on. Brain damage. Hello? Brain damage.
Oh, I got a question for the witch.
Okay.
Okay, witch. Okay, here's my question. Okay, I forgot my... Oh, yeah. Can you give that number out on the air again? Not the number. The address?
Okay.
I got another question here.
Yeah.
I don't really like witches that much, but I just feel against them because every time I get the picture, I get the... old head with the long hat and ugly nose, everything. So I kind of think witches stink, but you changed my opinion, and I got some fat witch merchandise for y'all. So if you want my P.O. box, you can just tell me, and I'll call and give it to you, all right?
Uh-huh.
All right, thanks.
Bye. Hi. The one request I had was to repeat the address that you gave a few minutes ago.
Okay. It's Llewellyn Publications, Post Office Box 64383, St. Paul, Minnesota, 55164-0383, and they have a toll-free number, which is 1-800-843-6666.
6666?
No. It actually spells out the moon, but...
And the few other things, too. Well, actually, they can get away with it because it's four sixes instead of three.
Yes, it's a four instead of three. And what was the other thing that came through? You said you had another question?
No, that was it. He wanted to actually send questions in to you in particular and maybe anybody else there, too, about other things. Let me go back to this one other caller here, just a second. Hi there. Hello. Hello.
Yeah, I got Tony Thomas from Faith Shore here.
Tony Thomas. Okay, I do want you to do your song tonight, but what I need from you now is a question for the witch.
A question for the witch? Okay. I watched the sightings and those shows like that on the stations. I was just wondering, there was one incident where a cameraman was in a haunted house, and he went up to the roof, and a noose was tied around his neck by some sort of ghost, and he got a picture of himself. I was wondering if she knows about that, and if that was real.
Okay, hang on. Hi, brain damage. Got a question?
I have a question. Yes, I do.
Yes.
All right. I was wondering, before she said she didn't condone, like, devil worshipping and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And what is her opinion of that? And if so, and what is her response to anyone who says that witchcraft and that occult practice are the same thing?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay. Hi there. Two questions. Got two good ones for you.
Uh-oh.
First of all, there was a story of a television cameraman who went into this haunted house, and apparently a spirit came out and put a noose around his neck, and he got it all on film. First of all, did you hear about that? That was his first question.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't.
And the second question is, could that happen, really?
Questionable. I wasn't there, and I'm working on hearsay, so I'm going to have to, you know, do the pinch it in the dark here. One of several things. It could have been a hoax. I mean, that's the obvious thing to come to mind right away. Whether it was perpetrated by the cameraman or by someone from the house, that's the first thing to come to mind. Spirits can manipulate material objects, but that happens on a far less frequent basis than we might be led to believe by all the stories of things that go bump in the night. I mean, I have had experiences that, with people who have had things moved around their house, but usually it's by spirits who have died there, and they're just tinkering. You know, it's like this is their home and they're kind of fuddling with things. If that actually did happen, then obviously there was something malevolent there that wasn't very happy about being put on camera and made that perfectly clear to the individual.
Out of the Amityville Horror.
It's very hard to say. It's a horrible thing to say, but I find that stretching things just a little bit. I always tend to take information like that with a very big grain of salt, because unless I was there to personally see it and personally experience it, it's hard to say if something in fact did happen. Camera or no camera, there are ways. We have the technology now to make almost anything look real.
I have another one that came up, too. We delved a little bit into Satan worship. The person wants to know, I guess didn't hear the beginning of the interview. First of all, we went through how witches became associated with Satan. I have one that I could even elaborate further. Are there groups of witches that not only recognize the Satan that was created out of the conflict of the past, but worship him? Or is that Satan worships something else completely?
Satanism has nothing to do with Wicca. In order to be a Satanist, you have to be a Christian.
Ah, very good.
The word Hasatan in Hebrew means the enemy. It pertained to anyone who Israel happened to be fighting at the time. When the church came on the scene and put a label on the horned god and made it into this, you know, red thing with the tail and the whole nine yards, they called him Satan, the enemy, the fallen angel, the enemy of God. So in some respects, the church not only created their own worst enemy, but then they started talking about him.
Oh, that gives me another great question. When you're familiar with Salman Rushdie, right? And the satanic verses of the Quran.
Sorry, no.
Okay, because apparently
I stay away from all of that stuff,
yeah,
because it has nothing to do with what I do.
Yeah.
I know enough about it to talk about it intelligently, simply because so many people immediately make that association.
Yeah, but the Islamic Satan, I'm just wondering where that came from.
You know, one of the things that I tell people is that, you know, they ask me, well, do you ever feel like you're doing something wrong? It's like, no, because I spent 5 years as a born-again Christian. I know their theology. I studied their theology. Matter of fact, I preached that theology. I have literally walked a mile in those shoes. So I have that experience to draw from, and I understand what they believe. However, I simply cannot put myself into that mold anymore. That was a very long time ago, obviously, but I do understand it. And because I work with a lot of people who were theologians, I had a little more time to really look at the Bible from a more critical viewpoint as literature than just as a sacred text. And you learn quite a bit when you start doing that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I consider myself to have been born into the, I would say, the right Christian sect, because I went to Catholic schools for 12 years, and they go through the sacred part in your first few years, but once you get into the high school level and the college level, they don't do that, to their credit. They do treat it as literature, and they impart its wisdom on its own merits.
Right.
That's one thing that I do have to praise the Catholic theologians for doing. They actually do that. One of the biggest problems that they have, that these theologians have told me, the people who are most critical of them are the ones who weren't taught that way.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah. Another favorite is that, yeah, a lot of those same Catholics are the ones who criticize the Jesuits, and that the Jesuit order is most adept at doing it that way, from a critical standpoint. But that's me. That's my background. We're talking about witchcraft here. Let's see. Let's see if I have any more questions. Hang on just a minute.
Okay.
Brain damage. You got a question?
Yeah, I'm watching TV right now, right?
Yeah.
And what I see is amazing. On USA, right?
Uh-huh.
They got Child's Play 2 on, right?
Yeah.
On TNT, they have Child's Play on, right?
Yeah.
And on another channel, they have Child's Play 3 on.
Incredible.
That's not the one. That's not, but that has to do with my question, right? I am so. I watched Child's Play 2 today when it was on USA this morning, right?
Yep.
And that's so weird. Possession. I'm just thinking about that.
Oh, okay. Well, again, I don't know whether or not she's going to go into it, but I'll ask her.
Wait, can you answer this?
Yeah.
Is it possible? I know Child Chucky was like Satan possessing the doll or something like that.
Yeah.
Is it possible for a dead soul to go into someone's body like that, or a witch to command that soul into the body, or for a living person to switch souls?
I'll ask.
All right, switching souls, ask about that.
Okay. Got a question?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to find out, I had an eerie experience with the tape recorder years ago when my daughters were playing over a tape, and all of a sudden a strange voice came on with a couple of words, and it just shook me, and I'm leery of the medium ever since as far as, I guess especially, and I know research has been done over in Germany on voices of the dead coming onto tape recordings, and it seems to be, especially when a tape is used and reused, does that open a door to a parallel universe somehow, or does she have any knowledge or experience on what happens with the tapes, because eerie things do happen from time to time.
Okay, I'll find out. Well, keep listening, and I'll relay the question to her.
Terrific.
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
Got two good ones for you.
Okay.
Well, first off, yes.
I just want to remind, we're just going till 2, right?
Yeah, we're going to go till the top of the hour, and then I'm going to devote the next hour to just an open forum.
Okay.
And the usual stuff for the next hour. But I know 4 minutes before I announce the winners of the Anyone Can Host contest. But anyway, let me get the two questions in. Changing souls was one of the questions. Whether two people could either A, switch souls, or B, possess another, a dead soul could possess another body, or C, could an inanimate object become the means of a soul of possession. What brought it up was that there are 3 different Child's Play movies, you know, that horror movie, on 3 different cable channels right now as we speak. So the whole subject of possession came up.
Okay, I guess the best thing I can tell you is that, yes, I believe possession can occur. Do I think it happens frequently? No. Why do I think it happens? Because somehow, somewhere along the way, a person becomes very psychically open to entities and does not know how to properly protect themselves or whatever. It's a very gray area that we're talking about here. I can't tell you definitively yes or definitively no, because, first of all, I can't prove this. You know, I mean, this isn't something I'm going to be able to go out and carve in stone anywhere. I can only tell you what I think happens. I think that objects can carry residual negative energy. There are certainly historical and literary accounts of souls being entrapped in objects. Whether or not that still occurs today, I question. I do believe objects carry energy with them and that they can carry memories, like the old saying, walls can talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are some houses that you walk into and you can feel the memories in that house. If that family was very, very sad and very, very angry, you can feel that when you go in a home. You know, objects do pick up the energy that's around them, and I think even physicists will probably agree with me a little bit on that one.
Yeah, we would.
As far as switching souls, that one sounds a little far-fetched to me. You know, people talk about astral projection and leaving their body, and even when they do, everything that I've heard on that subject says that there is a cord that connects the soul to the body, and the only way that that soul would leave is if the cord were cut, you know, by something like an accident or severe sickness, so on and so forth, a trauma that cuts that cord. So I would say people switching souls is a little funky.
Okay.
To consider. I can't see where that would happen.
Yeah. Okay, I have one last question before the witching hour
as it were.
Hits. The question is, a person found some strange voices on his tape recorder, and he had heard of some research going on in Germany that voices of the dead could actually appear on tape recorders out of nowhere. And before I go any further, I just do have to tell you that, folks,
It is now, I guess it's now 1 o'clock again, although it says 2 o'clock on my clock. It should now say 1 o'clock on yours. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, and we are now in what I would call a free hour. This hour, we get to do this hour all over again, and we can do it differently. And we are going to do this, but first, we'll answer this last question. The voices on the tape
okay.
recordings.
Okay. No, you got me distracted. I'm sorry.
Sorry
can
about that.
The question?
Okay. The voice on the tape.
Oh, voice
recorder.
On the tape. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I definitely think that is possible. I have not heard anything on tape, but I have seen some photographs that are pretty astounding of spiritual entities. And I mean, I'm not talking about people who went someplace specifically to take pictures of ghosts. These are people who are taking pictures of landscape that got strange images that seem to have faces or lights running through them. And the camera's been checked, and the film's been checked, and there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with each. If a spirit is an energy source, which we basically do believe it is, thought is energy, therefore spirit is likely energy, and it's usually relayed in terms of light, then I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be sensitive to photographing or to taping like any other energy source. It is quite feasible that that's the case, but what I would do is I would have the machine checked, I would have the tape checked by someone who knows what they're doing, you know, professional. Someone, don't even tell them why you're having it checked, just tell them that it seemed to be acting funny, you wanted to have the machine checked, you wanted the tape checked, and if that all checks out, then I would maybe take it somewhere where you could have it enhanced to see if you can discern what the voices were saying.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you about something else that was interesting. Happened to me last night in a darkened room, and you know those candles that look like citronella candles, that shape, the jar they're in? It looked like for the world, and that in the glass, it almost looked like there was a face in it. Now that could just be the light hitting certain places at the right time, or maybe could be somebody into
exactly.
the show.
Your best bet, in generally speaking, is to carry skepticism in your back pocket
yeah.
like a good friend.
Yeah.
You know, if all your scientific methods prove that nothing else seems to be wrong, there isn't any other feasible explanation, then you probably have had a very viable experience. I don't want to discourage people, all right? I don't want them to think that nothing that happens is viable. However, I don't think we should over-spiritualize the mundane either.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's a very fine balance there. You know, if the light was reflecting weird, you know, if something else is going on that may have caused that, well, maybe it was the way you were looking at it. However, if the temperature in the room dropped 10 degrees, you probably had a very real spiritual experience because temperature changes are noted to go with spiritual experiences, especially dealing with ghosts.
If a room gets cold, the spirit must not be too happy with you.
No, actually, that generally just means that there's a spirit present.
Oh, it doesn't imply any emotional?
Mm-mm, not at all. Not at all. I was recently in a home with my husband that was very, very haunted. The people had called us because they just needed some help getting it cleaned out. And at first, we couldn't find anything. We were just walking around. Everything seemed fine. All of a sudden, I moved into the kitchen and looked up the stairs. And I literally felt the rush of cold air come down the stairs, and at that moment, I realized what had happened there, and it was simply the spirit's way of communicating. I don't know why the temperature drops, perhaps because they're not corporeal, but it really does drop, and it's very noticeable.
Hmm. Very interesting. I got to think about that next time I feel a draft in a room.
Like, it was pretty amazing. So that was kind of neat. But you know, that's, you know, you look for a combination of factors and then sit down and say, well, did I feel any different? You know, what was anything else going on? Could it have been caused by anything else? Make a note of what you experienced. Keep a diary of your experiences. Go back, read them later, see if they mean anything to you. See if there's a consistency of happenings. Very frequently, if a ghost is present, things will happen on a repeated basis and usually on some sort of regular time frame that has to do with something that the spirit went through that you have no knowledge of. So, I mean, there are ways to track these things in such a manner that you can look back at it and go, I have made every effort to, you know, write this off, to scientifically explain it. Here's all my information, and it still says something's going on here. And then you know that, you know, people want proof. And I think if we're going to start believing in magic and in ghosts and in spirits and so on and so forth, we do need to take a slightly more scientific approach to it. There's nothing wrong with science. Science isn't a bad, nasty word. It can be a very good friend.
Yeah, one of my favorites is that there are a lot of people who believe, and there are a few, quite a few born-again Christians in that flock who believe that science and religion do conflict.
Have no common ground.
Yeah.
But I got news for them. The religion of yesterday is today's science.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it is now 1:06, and yeah, we have that free hour coming up. And we've just been talking with Trish Telesco, a noted expert on witchcraft. And we thank you for coming on and spending your Saturday night with us.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. Tell folks that if they're interested, I've got several books available through Llewellyn that they can read all about my philosophies on this subject.
And it was quite enlightening to hear several different views of, actually, several different views of witchcraft coming out of one person. It was, I am amazed. Thank you very much for calling. And Poetry Guy, if you'd like to call back, you can, but I'm going to hang up the phone right now.
Okay, you have a good one.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Okay.
And that's it. And now, as promised, I'm going to announce the winner of the Mr. Wizard Brain Damage Anyone Can Host contest. I think Mr. Wizard's waiting. Is this Mr. Wizard? Hello? Ain't nobody. Okay, folks. The winners of the Brain Damage Anyone Can Host contest. Tony Thomas.
Yes.
Tony Thomas. Glad to have you on. Sorry to keep you waiting.
Hey, no problem.
Okay, because you're going to be very glad to hear that you are one of the winners.
Oh, that's great.
Anyone Can Host contest.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. But since I am one of the more indecisive people in this world, you're going to have to share your time with somebody.
Oh, that's great.
Yes, and I think you'll be very happy to know who these two people are. Actually, they entered as co-hosts. And the reason why is because one is the left brain and one is the right brain. Michelle, the left brain, and Azure, the right brain.
Oh, that's great.
And they will host the show with you. So you will be able to do whatever songs you like. And, of course, you have one for tonight, I am sure. And Michelle and Azure will join you. And somehow we will set up three microphones here, and you'll have a phone in between you, and you can all fight amongst yourselves who's going to answer it. But this show is going to be yours. Now, the only question I have to ask the three of you, and I only have one of you here, which upcoming week would you like to come up and get both of you together? Now, Tony, I have to ask you one. No. I'm not going to ask you this favor. I am going to put you on the side and put you on another line. So possibly, if the left and the right brain can get together and call me, maybe you're on one of the other lines now. We can get the three of you together and we can decide when we're going to have you on.
Oh, that's great! When do you want me to play my song?
Now.
My celebration song.
Now.
Okay, hold on.
Yes. Tony, it was great as usual. Only trouble is your guitar drowned you out again. But here's the good news. You'll be able to play whatever song you like in the comfort of the WUSB studios where that won't happen.
That's great.
Okay. So, Tony, I'm going to park you over to another line here. Okay? Uh-huh. Okay. Tony, stick around a bit. Tony.
Yeah.
Stick around for a bit, and I'll see if I can find Jim somewhere and the left and the right brain. Okay, stick around. Brain damage.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Mr. Wizard, sorry you didn't win.
It's all right. I want to give my congratulations to Tony Thomas and those two girls. I know you must have done a great job, and I want to say thank you to all those people who wrote in.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for writing in, too.
Yeah, I got a song.
How long is it?
Not that long, but it's dedicated to someone in your audience.
Okay, go for it.
You know the... There's this guy named Jeff. You know
yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
And he started talking to me about how to improve my songs, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to sing this one for him. And also I'm going to sing this for Prozac guy.
Sure.
All right. Tell me if you can hear the instrument, right?
The what?
I'm being assisted by an instrument.
An instrument. Oh, my.
You hear this?
Yeah.
You heard it?
Yeah.
Loud enough?
Yeah.
Let me just make... All right, how's that?
You don't want it to be too loud because you remember the problem Tony just had.
Yeah, well, it's got a little instrumental beginning, all right?
Okay.
Ready? Here it is. Guy and Jeff.
Okay, see ya.
All right.
Thanks. Brain damage.
Hey there. You want to hear something interesting?
Okay, but keep it short.
Okay, this will be short. Was listening to a different radio station. I know, I'm scum. Reached up to my bookshelf and picked up one of Ms. Telesco's books and then coincidentally turned on WUSB just as her segment was winding up.
I would chalk that up as a spiritual experience.
As would I. Blessed be and merry met, and may everyone have a very merry and very celebratory silent.
Uh-huh.
Farewell.
Thank you. That was quite an experience. Yes.
Hey, what's up, Jim?
Hey, Jim. Okay. Jim.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on with Tony.
All right.
And I'm just going to continue my search for the left and right brain. Michelle on Azure. Hang on. Hello.
Hey.
Hey, got to put Jim on with you.
All right.
Okay. Okay, guys, stick around for a while. Okay. Brain damage.
Yeah, how you doing? This is Tyrone. What's up?
Hey, Tyrone, I didn't get your check.
You didn't get my check? What's up? I sent it.
Nope, didn't get it.
I said, yo, Mr. Mailman, here's my letter.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
He said, okay, I'll bring it to you, and you win the show. He read it. I read it to him.
Hey, I didn't get it.
Why
it,
not, man?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you can get my check for 250.
No 250.
Oh, man, what's up? I told him, I said, you bring this, and I'm going to win the show. And then I said, when I host the show, I bring you and me. And he said, okay, I come with you, and you win.
And you know something? You would have, if you had sent me that check, you would have been a shoo-in.
Yeah, I definitely would have won, because I'm the man, Tyrone the man. Yeah, because I write good letter, I write a man, and I say, yo, 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 I host your show. And yep. He said, okay, I bring this to brain damage, and you win the show. And I'm going to win the show.
Yo, 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 host. Yo, 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 host this show, and I love those O's, especially the O in 250, okay?
Yo, 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 250, I give
That's
you 250.
Right.
I sent the check, too.
Well, I would stop payment on that check immediately before somebody else gets his hands on it.
Someone stole my check, and they're using it to buy their Glocks, and they're shooting people.
You can get a Glock for $250?
Yeah, a Glock. A Glock 22 for $250.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're shooting people right now.
Well, if you sent me the $250, I might have bought one myself.
Yeah, you could protect yourself against that kid that say you suck, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Pop him in his mouth and say, yo, now who sucks? You say, I'm going to shoot you in your face, boy.
Oh, God. Nah, I let him spend the rest of his life as an idiot, which he is.
Yeah,
anyway,
but I'm glad that Tony won and I didn't win because he sounds like a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, that's why I picked him.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Okay.
I listen all the time, and Tony says, cake, I love cake.
That's right.
I like him. That's mm-hmm. cool, man.
You know what? I might even bake one just for the occasion. Okay, thanks a lot for calling, Tyrone.
Hi, buddy.
See ya.
Bye.
Brain damage.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on tonight?
So this is a place where you understand sick behavior?
Yeah, we WUSB.
Yeah, you understand Tyrone?
Well, I guess he is no harder to understand than many of the people who have called. I don't understand why his $250 check never got here.
Well, if you understand sick behavior, you should understand.
Yeah, that figures. Anyway, what else is going on?
Not much. I, like, missed the show last week, right?
Yeah.
And then I talked to Jim.
Yep.
He told me what went on.
Okay.
That you, like, extended the contest. And so I'm pissed I didn't win.
Well, don't be so pissed. I think you'll enjoy the people who did win.
Yeah, well, Tony's cool. I can't reveal his real identity, but...
Well, he revealed it to me, so...
Yeah.
But don't reveal it to everybody else, besides which... Well, he had to reveal his identity to me. How else is he going to get in here if I don't know who he is?
No, I'm saying, like, you know him.
Yeah, of course I do.
Yeah, because we've been on teleconference.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks a lot for calling.
Could you throw me aside so I can speak to him?
Yeah, matter of fact, if you do want to speak to Tony, I do have him right here. Hang on. Okay, you want him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait.
You're in. Okay, remember, folks, I'm not adding any more people until I get my two other winners here. Matter of fact, those two other winners are the only ones who are going to fit.
Yo, Matt.
So no more requests. Yeah.
Did you ever get me Jim's number?
Oh, boy. I am terrible. But hang on. You know, by the time I actually get him Jim's number, he's probably going to be Thanksgiving. He's going to be up here anyway. Brain damage.
Yeah, Matt.
Yes.
Rick Morikonza. I'd just like to call in, tell you I really enjoy your show a great deal.
Oh.
And listen to it quite often. And so it was a really terrific show today. And,
oh, thanks.
That's just about it.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Keep listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Brain damage.
Yes, I'd like to talk about chairs.
Chairs, okay.
Twan, I'd like to talk about chairs.
I just said yes.
Okay. Sure. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Yes. I have lots of chairs. I collect them.
Uh-huh.
I have all different kinds of chairs. I have high chairs, low chairs, long chairs, and short chairs.
Okay, let's see, what kind of, what's the most expensive chair you have?
Most expensive chair I had, I paid $14,000 at an auction in New York City.
And what was it?
It was Elvis's chair, his baby chair.
Really?
Yes, I have that.
Wow.
Well, I don't sit in that one because I have it encased in glass, because I don't want to break it, it's too valuable.
Right.
Yes, and I love my chairs. They call me the chair man.
Really?
Yes, they do.
What's your most comfortable chair?
My most comfortable chair? I'd have to say my 1942 voluptuous green chair. It's gorgeous. I love it. It feels so comfortable.
Uh-huh.
It's just padded all around, and it feels great. It feels great. I love it.
Okay. What's your least comfortable chair?
Least comfortable chair? I'm going to have to say Michael Jackson's chair.
Uh-huh.
I have Michael Jackson, one of his first chairs, and it's very hard. I don't like it. It seems to hurt. It hurts my buttocks.
I wonder why.
I don't know. Does he have a penis?
Does he?
I don't know.
Well, you see, well, I remember one time Eddie Murphy had a Michael Jackson doll, and he put it on TV, and he said, you know, I hear these dolls are anatomically correct. So he pulls the doll's pants down, and sure enough, just as he thought.
Really?
Nothing
so
there.
Great.
Wasn't there.
Yeah, and you know something? I was men with big toes.
You like men with big toes? What does that have to do with chairs? Don't men with big toes leave lots of toe jam on the foot of the chair or something
that,
like that?
It's not just a regular chair. You put your feet in, like, these little slots in the bottom, which is part of the chair.
Uh-huh.
And it vibrates, and it feels very nice.
Cool.
And when my girlfriend Kara sits in it, it just feels so great because she has big toes, and I like it.
Ooh.
Great.
Kinky.
Yeah, very kinky. It's so jiggly. Like it. It's great.
Tell me something. Have you ever gotten hold of an electric chair?
Yes.
You do?
Oh, I have one of them, but it's illegal against the New York State law to have it hooked up into the electric supply.
Well, yeah, if the state can't do it, then you can't.
Yes, but I have it tapped into the wires of my house, and it actually works, and I've electrocuted my cat.
Ooh.
Right in the back.
You know what you should, you know what somebody should do? Somebody should, you know what you should do? You should call up the George Pataki campaign, right?
Yes.
And do a demo for him.
George Pataki, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, he's running for governor and he wants to make it legal to use a chair again.
Yes, my cat's name's Joy, J-O-B Joy.
Yeah.
Nice cat.
Oh, it was.
All right. My throat hurts a lot because when I was using the vibrator chair, I was drinking a glass of water, filled it a little bit, and it got on my feet, and I got a little shock.
Ooh.
So it didn't taste very well.
No, I wouldn't.
And it hurt my throat a little bit. I think I'm going to have to go to the gynecologist to get a check.
Okay, got to go. Thanks.
Thank you.
Brain damage.
Hello. I got a problem maybe you can help me with. You're familiar with electronics a little bit? Or?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, because I got a beef and a consumer alert. I bought a 4-in-1 remote control about a year or so ago, and I moved locally, and the new cable box I got, it wouldn't work on. And
okay.
I called the person I got it from, and they gave a toll-free number, and they researched, and they said that there's no code number for this cable box that I have that would work for the control.
Okay, there are two things you can do. First of all, it's not unusual for something like that to happen. Anybody who makes something that's meant to be compatible with somebody else's product runs the risk of losing that compatibility when that other person's product changes. That is, it seems to be what your problem is here.
Right.
The best way to address the problem would be, is this cable box bought or rented?
It's rented.
Try to get the old model cable box back if you possibly can.
Well, I went a different direction. I got a new remote control at a discount, but
that works too.
I was frustrated because, you would think there'd be more compatibility with the products. The TVs seem to have similar codes.
Well, you see, that's true. But the TVs will eventually change. One of the reasons why they have similar codes is that the parts they use for the remote control are basically made by the same manufacturers,
mm-hmm.
so they can all have the same. That's not hard. But should that particular product change, then you're going to get screwed up. I'll give you an example with cameras. Nikon, about 7 or 8 years ago, introduced their first autofocus camera. Those of you familiar with it, it's called the N2020. Anyway, all the other lens manufacturers made autofocus lenses compatible with this particular model camera. Well, the only trouble is, a couple of years later, Nikon came out with a new model, the N8008. Made all the other autofocus lenses obsolete because the lenses that Nikon made were compatible with not only the current products, with everything they had planned for later on. the other manufacturers could not have known that. So what they did was back engineer to whatever was already out. So their lenses became obsolete.
You know, the new remote control I had also didn't have code numbers, but I was able to call a toll-free number, and they had other codes that they were able to tell me to do over the telephone.
Yeah. They can do that. If they're fortunate enough to develop a code to work the new parts that come out into the market, then they're okay.
Yeah.
The only trouble is that's a very, very hit-and-miss issue. Now, of course, there's one advantage that they have. With a lot of the Japanese manufacturers, they use common designs in many cases and common parts in a lot of cases. You will notice that that a lot of the front-loading VCRs seem to have very similar controls.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reason. Those chassis are all made by the same manufacturer.
I see.
Whether it's a Magnavox, whether it's a Panasonic, whether it's even a JVC, they may all be made by Matsushita Electric.
You know, because they also said they're having trouble even keeping up with all the codes, and like certain other products that are manufactured, usually the manufacturers will have standards where they're all interrelated.
Well, you know, I had a problem. I had a remote control. I lost the remote control on an older Panasonic TV, so I tried to, so I picked up one from Radio Shack.
Right, where I got mine.
Yeah, and the range on the thing is absolutely zero. I literally had to put the thing against the TV to get it to work. It was horrible. It was the worst $40 I ever spent.
Well, that's the shame of it, because you spend good money, expect the thing to last a while, and then
it's
outdated overnight, and that was my objection. I said, look, you know, this is ridiculous.
You know what I also do? You know, obviously, you're using the 4-in-1 remote because you don't want one for your TV and one for your VCR and one for your...
buying it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What I do is, first of all, I keep the three remotes that I use primarily for the TV, for the VCR, and for the cable together.
Mm-hmm.
But the two I use most frequently are the cable and the VCR. I took some Velcro tape. You know, Velcro tape that has two sides, stick one side on one thing, one side on the other. That's exactly what I did. So in the event that I had to switch between TV and VCR, stuck the two together.
Well, you still have to flip it back and forth.
Well, turn it over in your hand. It's no big deal.
The one I have now is manufactured by Universal. They're excellent. And it has light-up controls, too.
Yeah, they do get better, but the advantage is that the electronics industries, particularly in Japan, do cooperate.
Yeah.
So they do have that advantage. Camera industry is another story, but I just gave you an example of how somebody making a universal part would have to back engineer to fit all these different things, and they can't always stay ahead.
Yeah. Well, I hated to spend more money, but I'm happy again that I have something that works, but it's something that people should be aware of, because...
Be very careful. If you possibly can, if you can get a floor sample of the remote, if you can, I know that's not always easy, and test it with a model...
And she's sitting right next to me, and she wants to talk to you, because she doesn't believe me. She thinks it's all a joke, and I'm just telling her it's not.
Okay, put her on.
Okay, hold on, I'll get her.
Kara, come here, Kara.
Okay, here she is. Yes, hello. Yes, I'm Eric's girlfriend.
Nah, you're the same guy. Brain damage.
Oh, you got mad fat Buddha Smarty from Old Brook.
Wow.
So what's up?
What's up?
Yo, you know that Tyrone fella?
Yeah.
Well, Tyrone's my mad fat brother.
Really?
A mad fat brother. And you know what I am?
The guy who stole the check from Tyrone?
Yeah. And I'm using it exploitation, Tyrone. Yo, you know who I got here?
Who?
I got my trailer music buddy, Eddie Zygorski.
Oh, so you got, you bought CDs with the $250?
No, Eddie Zygorski is in the music biz. He sings songs about trailers. Because, you know, he lives in a mad fat trailer.
Eddie Zygorski.
Want to speak to Eddie Zygorski?
Yeah, sure.
Hold on for a minute. Hello?
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Eddie Zygorski.
Yeah,
I got a mad fat trailer song for you.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Want to hear it? All right. Yo, I'm living in a trailer and I'm
name is Ed. I live in a trailer without a bed. I live in a trailer. Hey, hey, hey. Yo, Dad.
Hello?
Yeah.
Is that great?
Yeah.
Do you think I can get a major label besides my friend put a smart... Yo, you're the best.
At the rate hip-hop's going, anybody can. Brain damage.
Yo, who's that fool that just called? I ain't got no stinker brother who lives in a trailer.
Okay, good.
I'm a rich man.
I hope not.
Live in a rich, big mansion with lots of chairs because remember that other guy who was talking about chairs?
Yeah.
Well, I got one that I got to tell him about. It's a gold chair that I bought from Snoop Doggy Dogg.
Wow.
Gold plated, and it's worth $14,000. So that beats his piece of crap chairs. For $250, I bought it. $14,000. $250.
Okay, thank you.
I got
brain damage.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, my name is Abe Bauman.
Who?
Abe Bauman.
Abe Bauman?
Hey.
Yes.
I'm talking like this.
Why?
Because I have someone here.
Who?
Eric.
Eric?
I have him hostage.
Is this Eric the chairman?
What?
Eric the chairman?
No, Eric Crowley.
Eric Crowley?
Yeah.
Okay, if you have Eric Crowley there, sure.
Who is he?
Who's Eric Crowley? You tell me. I have no idea who Eric Crowley is.
He's an actual Goldstein.
No, Eric Crowley?
I like to call him Crowley.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I got him.
Yeah, and what are you going to do with him?
I'm holding him for ransom.
You're holding him what?
For ransom.
Okay, so let me get right. If I send you... Now, I have to send you money or else you're going to send him back?
If you don't pay me $20,000... I'm going to kill Emmanuel Goldstein right now.
With what?
With a bucket.
A what?
A bucket.
A bucket? Yeah, I guess with a bucket of water, if he's on his computer, that could really give him a zing.
Not a bucket of water.
Bucket of water, wow.
Not a bucket of water.
Well, bucket of what?
Rocks.
What?
Rocks.
Rocks. You're going to kill him with a bucket of rocks. Well...
I'm a physics major.
You're a physics major and you want to kill Eric Crowley with a bucket of rocks.
Sure.
That's right.
And all this.
I hate to tell you got the wrong guy.
Oh, wait. Eric Crowley sent $20,000 to me. Eric Bauman.
Yay, dummy. You got the wrong guy.
Why?
Because his name ain't Eric Crowley.
What is his name?
Eric Corley.
You knew that.
No, you didn't. Brain damage.
Yes, my name is James, and I have a problem.
Sure.
Okay, I go to a major Catholic high school on Long Island.
Okay, I can imagine which one it is, but go on.
Which one do you think it is?
The one I didn't get into.
You didn't get into St. Francis?
St. Francis?
Well, I don't go there, but...
I didn't apply there, but anyway.
Okay, yes. I'm being stalked.
Stalked by whom?
A person who calls your radio station frequently would not like to give out any names, though.
Uh-huh.
Okay, he attends this school with me.
Uh-huh.
And we are in a class together. It is called drama. Actually, we were in it last year, and it was called a drama class. And our teacher was making us play a game. And in this game, we shut off all the lights in the auditorium. And with just, the floodlights in the back of an auditorium?
Yeah.
They put on the red light, and this kind of secluded everybody.
Yeah.
And we put on sweaters, like black sweaters, and
yeah.
We stalked around the room. This is a drama class. It helped us get into character.
Yeah.
I'm not, and this is a joke. And then I was manning the floodlight, and the game was called Sniper. And we had to shine the light on a person. And if we shined the light on that person, then they were caught. And
yeah.
I was manning the floodlight, and this person pulled me down from the floodlights. And I landed on a chorus rise, and it hurt. And now he is following me around anywhere. He is obsessed with me. What should I do?
Okay, why is he following you around?
He is obsessed with me. He thinks I am his son.
He thinks you're his son?
Yes.
I do believe it's your... You got to get line up... does the school have a psychologist?
I'd imagine. I wouldn't know. I have not had reason to attend it to see this person at any point in time. And it was even terrible. I was in front... This person is employed at the Lost and Found in our school.
Uh-huh.
This person sprayed me in the face with foot powder.
Foot powder?
Yes, I was injured. This person is obsessed with me. I'm frightened.
Oh, it must have athlete's face.
Oh, it was terrible. It was a traumatic experience. It was terrible. No, all right, I might as well reveal this person's identity to you. It's the person who believes he is Brother Smart.
Huh.
Yes, and he sprayed me in the face with foot powder, and he dropped a ladder on my head.
He's obsessed with you? Why does he want to kill you?
Because he believes I am his son.
He believes you're his son, and yet he wants to kill you?
Yes, this person we're dealing with is a very sick individual.
Yeah, I can imagine.
What is your recommendation to me?
Recommendation is run like hell.
I cannot leave the school, though. I want to receive a good education.
Think on him.
What?
Tell on him.
I tried. No one believes me.
No one believes you.
I have my friend Schwartz is a witness to this, but he does not.
Get some witnesses.
I have three witnesses. Schwartz.
Okay, get some witnesses. That's all I can tell you.
Schwartz, Christopher, and Matt. Not you.
Uh-huh.
Other Matt.
Okay.
That's a different story. And this person is stalking me.
Okay, then get somebody on it.
I have my friend Jerry.
Yeah.
Not Jerry, but Jerry.
Yeah.
But his credibility is kind of not good because he's not addicted to Prozac.
Oh.
And he's a vegetarian who wants to get his ear pierced.
Oh, that's three strikes against him right there.
In a Catholic school, you know, that's not really... Well,
a vegetarian wants to get his ear pierced and is on Prozac, not good in a Catholic school.
Well, you can't really discriminate against him. Well, you went to a Catholic school, correct?
Yeah, but we didn't have any vegetarians. Nobody dared wear an earring, and Prozac hadn't been invented yet.
Oh, so I need advice, please. Yeah. Advise me.
Best thing to do, report him to the authorities.
Done.
There are no authorities?
I did it.
Didn't work.
Didn't listen to me.
Okay. Take your three witnesses and yourself and beat the kid up.
That would be violence. I do not believe in violence.
Well, he's using it on you.
Dropped a ladder on my head.
That's right.
Sprayed me in the face with foot powder.
That's right.
That's violence?
Sure it is.
So what should I do? Should I take a stand against this individual?
Spray him in the face with... beat him in the face with moist sweat socks.
Oh, that's cruel. That is cruel. But it is a good idea.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for your advice.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Brain damage?
Oh, hi, what's up?
What's up?
I thought it was like... My clock is back. Daylight savings time kicked in, I guess.
It did. That's why I'm on for another 15 minutes.
Is there a teleconference then?
Well, yeah, but I'm saving the space for the other winners of my Anyone Can Host contest who haven't called yet.
But who's on now?
One of the winners of my Anyone Can Host contest and three other people, and I need the other two spaces.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Oh, somebody won that again?
Huh?
Somebody won? You're going to have somebody host?
Oh, yeah. There are going to be three people hosting the Anyone Can Host show.
Is it Tony Thomas or something?
Tony Thomas is one.
And so, what is it, like next week?
No, I've already announced. Oh, when's the show? I haven't decided yet. Depends on their availability.
Are you going to be there while I'm doing it?
Absolutely, have to be.
Yeah, FCC, by the way.
I have to be there. Well, yeah, FCC rules is one. Second of all, they've never worked the board here. How are they going to get on?
Yeah, that's right. Well, if somebody else might have been.
Well, you could have somebody else work the board, but I actually want to see this.
Hmm. Well, I don't know. That should be interesting. Somebody who's never been there before.
Mm-hmm. What, I'm going to actually walk away, let somebody else handle it, and go out that night or do something like that?
What?
I'm thinking of taking next week off, by the way. Reason why is because there's a Dick Dale concert I want to go to in the city, and wouldn't get back in time to do this.
Hey, Dick Dale, is it?
Yeah, Dick Dale. You know the guy that does surf music?
I've heard of him. I don't.
Yeah, if you see the movie Pulp Fiction, some of his music is featured in there. He's been doing a hell of a lot longer than that, though.
Yeah, I've heard of him. I guess he's from the 50s or something?
60s.
Oh.
Well, actually, he started doing it in the late 50s, but surf music took off in the early 60s. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no.
Brain damage. Hello? Hello? Cordless phone must have run out of batteries. Brain damage.
Hello, Lou Dobb.
Who?
Lou Dobb.
Lou Dobb?
Yeah, I got someone here who wants to talk to you.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, he just said, I am Trot.
You are what?
He said, I am Trot. I am a friend of James who is being stalked.
Okay. No wonder he doesn't have any witnesses. Brain damage.
Yes, I am Eric Crowley, and I am impermeable to a bucket of rocks.
That's because they're in your head. Brain damage.
Hi, I was wondering who the other winners of the contest are.
Well, the left brain and the right brain, Michelle and Azure.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
Ah, finally, you call.
Hi.
Been waiting for you for a good 47 minutes here. I announced at the top of the hour.
I'm sorry. I fell asleep during the first 5 minutes of Saturday Night Live, and I woke up like 10 minutes ago.
Well, yeah, Saturday Night Live will put you to sleep these days.
Yeah, definitely. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So I have the left brain here. Where's the right brain?
I haven't talked to her tonight. I think she went out, but I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah. Oh, she goes out the night that we're supposed to announce the winner.
Sorry.
Some host you're going to be.
It's a really crazy weekend, you know, with Halloween coming up, and I have midterms and stuff, and it's just been weird. We went on a haunted hayride last night with a bunch of people.
Ah.
Yeah. That was pretty cool. It was cheesy, but, you know.
Okay. So the two of you go to NYU?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're just home for the weekend then?
No, I commute, actually.
From where you are?
Yep, from Islip.
Oh, wow.
It's really hard, but, you know.
Yeah, I thought I had a long way to go.
Where do you come from?
I don't work in the city, but I go from a certain part of Suffolk County to Port Washington every day, and that's long.
Yeah.
But I was just so knocked over by your letter, the two of you. That I said, I gotta have these two on. You're going on with Tony Thomas, by the way.
All right, that should be an adventure.
Yes, definitely. As a matter of fact, I do have the letter in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me read the first paragraph, folks, just to give you an example of what to expect. A girl sits alone in Penn Station, poised on a stool facing a littered counter as she sucks down a Marlboro Light. I guess you do smoke. Can't do it in the studio, though. Sorry. She feels sick through every fault of her own. A wave of tiredness overcomes her as she ties her hair into an impromptu ponytail. She wonders why she didn't remain in bed this morning. Then she remembers she's an NYU student going through the daily grind. She realizes she's thirsty and scrounges up enough change to purchase a flat Coke. Is there a fruitful end in sight for this misguided soul? Although her future looks bright, her present radiates darkness. However, there is one thing that can turn this phenomenon around. The chance to host Brain Damage with her best friend, creative best friend, Azure. You got it. You won.
Thank you.
Won me over.
By the way, her name's Azure.
Azure.
Yeah.
Okay. Azure.
Hippie parents.
Yes, hippie parents. But, hey, at least she wrote in the right color.
Oh, she wrote in blue.
Of course.
Did she?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Wrote in blue. That's right. Of course, unfortunately, in her picture, I'm assuming you're on the left.
I'm the black and white one, I think.
Yes, you're on the left, and Azure's on the right. She's got red eyes.
Uh-oh.
I can fix that, by the way, but anyway. That's another story. I will not actually be on the air, although I will be present when the three of you go on.
Right.
One of the ideas is that I'm not supposed to be on the air. This is supposed to be your show. What we will do is... actually, you know what? Hang on just a second. I'm going to put you on with Tony Thomas. Just a second. Hello.
Hello.
Tony Thomas will be there to help you out. Now, one very important question I have is,
What is your availability?
Our availability?
Yes. What week can you go on?
I would say any upcoming weekend, any Saturday. Saturday's a great day, so.
Okay. So, I am going to set a date here. Let's see. Let's grab a calendar. And I can't find a calendar in here because the last one I saw was in 1993. Just a second.
I could be dead.
Today is the 30th, so I guess the next Saturday is the 6th or the 5th?
Yeah.
Next Saturday is the 5th. Saturday after that is the 12th.
Mm-hmm. And then the 19th and then the 26th.
Okay. I am going to set the 12th.
November 12th?
I can't make that.
You can't make that. What can you make, Tony?
Next week?
Next week, I can't make that.
You either got the 19th or the 26th.
Okay, let's make it the 19th.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay. November 19th, folks, is going to be the Anyone Can Host night.
So, Matt.
Yes.
Can you make it the 5th?
Why can't I make it the 5th?
Yeah.
I want to see Dick Dale in the city.
Oh, so you're not going to be there? You're not going to be there that Saturday?
I might be there for the second hour.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to have to find an adequate substitute. I'd make next week the Anyone Can Host night, but I won't be there for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I might do, this might be the perfect night to do it, too. We might have the New York City teleconference going on that night.
People from the city.
This is what we're going to, what I'm thinking of doing. Since I want to go see a concert on Saturday night, and I should be out of said concert sometime in the middle of the show. What I will do is, first of all, thank you. Background noise gets you every time. what I will do is get on a payphone. And then have several other people in different parts of the city. I know another friend of mine is going to a show at CBGB's.
Oh, yeah.
So I believe she will be about 10 blocks away. There may be some others in different parts of the city. Maybe I'll get my friend of the Upper East Side to call, too. And what we will do is do something, a repeat of something I did with Eric a few years ago when we were all at this college radio convention. Eric decided to go down to Penn Station. I was on the corner of 34th and 7th, a couple of other people down in the village, and we were all teleconferenced together, and what we were doing is grabbing people off the street and having them talk on the phone. And this was a rather interesting setup because what you were doing, of course there were like two people at each phone. Mm-hmm. What you were doing effectively is actually getting people as they walk by, and Michelle, you understand what it's like in the middle of Manhattan doing this, saying, "Well, I'll go on the radio," and holding the phone up to them. And, of course, nobody believed us initially.
I can just imagine the responses.
Oh, yeah, we got some homeless people on, and they said, "We'll buy you a cheeseburger if you go on the phone." Which, in fact, we did. And we had some kids walking by. Some of them did a freestyle rap together. It was a riot. And everybody is coming through at the same time. So the idea is to go for the weirdest people you can find. Of course, in the village, that's not hard to do. But on the corner of 34th and 7th at 1 o'clock in the morning, things get rather desolate because everything seems to be happening either uptown or downtown.
Well, you can always go down to 42nd.
Yeah, 42nd. Whoa. No, 42nd, people don't want to be recognized going down 42nd at 2 o'clock in the morning or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well,
actually, things have cleaned up since Letterman moved in, so that's not a problem. But people don't want to know that they go. Want other people to know that they go there.
I'd be afraid of what they would say, coming out of a peep show and then going on like a paper.
Yeah. That's another thing we were worried about. But on the other hand, we do have the red button here, the delay dump. Didn't have to use it once, though. I was very surprised from what the one guy who was here told me. That, by the way, back in 1988 was my first appearance on Brain Damage.
The 80s.
Yes.
How I miss them.
Well, there are a lot of people who recall them too fondly around here in terms of playing The Cure too often, but that's another story.
like a cult show tonight?
A what? Oh, no. Oh, yes. We had a witch on the air.
No. The cult.
The cult?
The cult.
Oh, cult.
Van.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I heard something about a cult show.
Oh, no, we had a show about the occult.
No.
I'm so confused right now.
You're talking about The Cure, right?
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, I heard something on the radio earlier today about The Cult.
Oh, okay. I don't know anything about it, though, because we don't have anybody doing our concert listings around here. The position's been vacant for the past 6 months, so nobody knows anything other than what we read in The Voice. But, again, that's probably the best place to find out. Look in The Voice, look in the concert section. Everybody in the city advertises in it.
It's the best taper in the world. I think that should be printed worldwide.
Village Voice?
Yay.
What would be the point? The Village Voice is for one specific part of the world.
Yeah, well, so I love that paper.
For and about.
What?
For and about one specific part of the world. I wonder if it is distributed outside the New York area. Never seen it anywhere else.
You can pick it up out here.
Sure you can.
7-Eleven.
Yeah. Well, oh, you know, if you stop by the Stony Brook campus, you can get the previous week's issue for free.
Oh, well, I'm talking
for free at school.
Yeah.
Down at the deli by my house, they got it.
Yeah.
The only place I found it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, still, we're out in the middle of nowhere, so.
Yeah. Well, it's not so bad.
Best column is La Dolce Musto by Michael Musto.
Yeah.
That's a great column.
Actually, I like the Village Voice sports sections where they had the Bob Dylan baseball abstract. Evaluated all the team's prospects using Dylan songs. It was terrific.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have to put you guys on hold because I want to get these last two callers in. Hang on.
Yeah.
Okay, they'll have plenty of time to talk to each other throughout the night. But here we go. Brain Damage.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
Okay, I got someone here who wants to talk to you.
Yes.
Hold on for a minute.
Bam. Yo, you got Brother Smart here from Holbrook.
Who?
You know James?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, James is a psychopath lunatic that goes to my school.
Uh-huh.
He's such a liar. I don't strobe light him. But you know what I do?
What?
I do beat Tyrone's brother, right?
Uh-huh.
And I do have someone here who wants to talk to you.
Okay.
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. You know who I am?
No.
Guess who?
Why?
Alfred Hitchcock.
Alfred Hitchcock has been dead for the past 20 years. Brain Damage.
Yes. Hello. I am the fourth winner of the show. I am Habib. I am the fourth winner.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
I come from the 7-Eleven on the corner, and I am the fourth winner of the show.
If you give me free big gulps for life, maybe. Brain Damage.
Yeah, I'm Habib.
Yeah, right. It's 2 o'clock again. But this has been Brain Damage. This has been Matt. This has been an interesting evening. So, without further ado, we will close it. And for once, I don't have another DJ breathing down my neck. Good night, everybody. See ya in 2 weeks, maybe. 1 week, possibly. Anon. Yes. Bye-bye.
On 90.1 WUSB Stony Brook, on Sundays at 2:30 p.m., it's time for Jazz on the Air. Jazz on the Air features four rotating hosts who bring you a diversity of music from every corner of the jazz world. That's Sundays at 2:30 p.m. exclusively here on the first station of the 90s, WUSB Stony Brook.